Hi, we're Visible, the wireless company with nothing to hide. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for $25 a month, taxes and fees included. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not into you. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.
Canva presents stories to keep you up at night. It was an ordinary work day until...
The Singapore presentation is at...
3 a.m.
The office was shocked.
That's when we sleep.
Maya made it less scary with Canva.
I'll just record my presentation so Singapore can watch it anytime.
Record and present anytime with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
What is up, people of the internet? Welcome back to another episode of the Waveform Podcast. We're your hosts. I'm Marquez.
I'm Andrew.
And I'm David.
And this week we've got a mysterious product that we want to talk about. It's sort of a weird one, but it exists in real life, and you've already seen it if you're watching this podcast. Trust me. We've also got Google Pixel leaks. Surprise, surprise. I know that doesn't happen very much. And also, we'll wrap it up with Google finally announcing some of its plans to challenge Microsoft and ChatGPT. But first of all, can we talk about the moon for a second?
And how the moon landing was fake.
You still believe in the moon?
Oh,
just kidding. No, I think
I gotta get out of here.
The whole internet collectively had like a wave of this Samsung moon photo story. It kind of just washed over the internet for like a week. I made a video sort of breaking it down, explaining what's happening. To rewind a little bit, Galaxy S23 Ultra has 100x space zoom. Mm-hmm. And it's not the first one. I think the S21 Ultra was the first one to have, or S20 Ultra. S20 Ultra was the first one to have
space zoom.
Yeah, yeah. Space zoom. Mm-hmm. And so space zoom, you know, interesting name, but the idea is you can zoom in 100x to things really, really far away. And what's further away than space? You want to take pictures of things in space. And in some of their earliest and most interesting advertising, zoom in on the moon, take a picture of the moon. Cool. So that's what people have been doing for years. And I think in the past, we realized that Huawei, they were accused of faking their moon photos, mm-hmm. which they, you know, people would zoom in really far on the moon on some Huawei phones, and they'd take a photo of a blurry moon, and then somehow their photo would be really detailed and be like, what's going on here? And that had its old wave. That already washed over the internet.
Yeah, that was the P30 series, which was like the first phone with that periscope camera.
Yeah.
And so that they made a huge deal that you could actually get that close to the moon.
Yeah.
And there was a huge controversy over whether that they were faking it or not.
And then there's this whole section of the internet that's like, look at how bad the iPhone's camera is. It's just a blob on the iPhone.
Yeah.
And then so that comparison always happens. So now Samsung has this thing happen where I think maybe a month ago I made a short zooming in. We had a full moon. I zoomed all the way in. I just posted the clip because it was impressive on Twitter, and it had like 20 million views the next day. Like it kind of blew up. And in that, I sort of said, well, at least they're not doing the thing that Huawei got accused of doing, of like overlaying the moon. But now they are getting accused of that exact thing. So what's interesting is we had a Reddit user do an experiment because he was sort of thinking that maybe Samsung was enhancing their moon photos a little bit. So he took a printout of a photo of the moon. And actually, no, not a printout. I think it's just on his monitor.
He made it in Photoshop,
You know, put it across the room, zoom all the way in to 50x, 100x, and take a picture of the image of the moon on a screen, and it works. It looks like the moon. Then he takes a blurry image of the moon, takes a picture of that, and the end result is like dramatically sharpened, much more detail than the original image could ever have, which leads us to all believe whatever's going on here, it's fake detail. Samsung is doing something.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out they've been doing this for generations, since like S10 or something like that. There's a whole page of documentation on Samsung's site that talks about this. But I always thought it was funny because We always talk about like computational photography, and I did the video on the iPhone's camera, and I did another video called Smartphone Cameras Versus Reality. And smartphone cameras, they just edit reality. They just edit all the time. And this one particular thing people really seem to get attached to, which is moon photos, which is, as far as I can tell, not a very common picture to take. But it's such an obvious use case where people can notice that it's, quote, faking the image of the moon. It's with AI, et cetera. It's an interesting story. I just felt like that was a fun wave of internet.
I think it's like not common in the sense that we don't see everyone taking it, but it still winds up being, if you think about all the pictures taken of a singular thing in the entire world, it might be the most common because if you're thinking of people, you still have to think of them as individual people. So it does have this opportunity to be the one thing that everyone in the world can see and take a picture of.
Is the moon the
and
most,
therefore
the most photographed thing of all time?
Singular thing?
I don't know. I mean, it's funny because it's tidally locked, right? So it's going to look the exact same from all angles of the Earth on every single night.
Prove it.
I could if you want me to. And so everyone's images are going to look vaguely the same. It's like those things happen on Instagram sometimes where people take almost the exact same photo and then they accuse each other of like stealing each other's images. Mm. And they're slightly different, but they're almost exactly the same. Like the moon is the one thing that's going to look the same to everyone. Mm-hmm. So if you were going to run a quote unquote scene optimizer on the moon, it would be the easiest thing to do it on.
Yeah.
And Samsung actually ended up releasing a statement this morning after we put our video out yesterday, mm-hmm. or 2 days ago, or whenever we put that out.
Yeah.
After multi-frame processing has taken place, Galaxy Camera further harnesses Scene Optimizer's deep learning-based AI detail enhancement, that's a lot of words, engine to effectively eliminate remaining noise and enhance the image details even further, which is a lot of words that mean very little.
Engine.
They have this diagram of like the pipeline of how it apparently works, and it just shows like learning data, low resolution moon photo, and then it's just like
black box,
neural engine.
No, it's just like some squiggly lines,
beep boop,
AI and then it comes up.
And it's like they never, I don't know, they sometimes deny things, but they sort of use big words to say very little.
I think the only thing that I can definitely tell, which is somewhat interesting, is I think most people functionally understand it as going, camera sees moon, camera recognizes moon, camera takes picture of moon, puts it on top of my picture, like just an overlay.
Yeah.
And that's not actually what's happening. That would be, I don't want to say more fake. That would just be like more brute force.
There was an old, I think I saw like a Vivo phone that wasn't zooming in on the moon, but if it was a picture in the dark sky and there was the moon, it was like straight up putting a fake moon in there, and like way closer. I'll try and find that photo again, but it wasn't like the zoom into the moon just randomly would enhance it.
So this one's a little more interesting. We kind of talked about DALL-E when it came out, how, you know, generative AI can create a photo from static and find details in however much you want it to find details. This one is like, if I take a picture of the moon and it's like kind of red tonight, it will still enhance it and find all the details of what it knows a moon should look like because Scene Optimizer is on, but it also will still be kind of red because it is still using my source image and running it through the AI. Oh, that's, they thought they could get away with that?
They called it Supermoon mode, so I think kind of expecting it to be
that
fake.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I guess this one's very...
Oh my God. So for the audio listeners, basically the image on the left, which doesn't have the optimizer on or whatever, is just like, kind of like a glowing white,
like
small glowing white dot. And then the resulting image after the photo was taken is a giant moon.
Yeah. It's also a one times photo down like an alleyway. So you're seeing building and then in the sky, it's a small portion of it, but it's still like quadrupling the size of the moon.
Yeah.
That one's a little more hand-fisted. It's not doing that.
Yeah.
But I guess the point is there are tests where like you can put a bunch of like pixels, or let's say an airplane flies in front of the moon or a satellite or something happens where your moon actually happens to look a little bit different. Your photo through AI will still have that distinguishing detail. So it's not just an overlay. It is actually running it through this engine, this black box of AI, whatever Samsung is doing. And so that's what's happening. I just think it's funny that we talk about this so much, but there's no articles about how, like, I don't know, you take...
Okay. Your face?
Yeah, the moon is, let's say it's one of the most commonly photographed items. Take another thing like Stonehenge, like a commonly photographed item. Everyone who takes a photo of it with Samsung's Scene Optimizer turned on, all of their grass will be greener in all of their pictures. All of their skies will be bluer. And that's not a particularly surprising fact. That's just like the way these phones and their AI process images. They're editing these things all the time. We're just a little more reactive when it's the moon for some reason.
Well, it's a particular object versus like a general kind of
grass and sky.
Like Scene Optimizer versus Object Optimizer is like a little bit different, I guess.
But what happens when, like, take somewhere like New York City, right? Where we now have like 6 decades of pretty constant photography in a pretty limited area. Mm-hmm. like, at what point can these, like, a company like Apple or Google that has access to these giant amounts of photo sets with location data just start to know what everything looks like from every angle?
Oh, yeah.
And then that doesn't that sort of blur the line between scene optimizer and object optimizer? Like, if it was like, oh, I've seen like 10,000 pictures from this exact intersection, I know that at 2 p.m. the light hits this building and makes it look crazy, so I'm just going to, like, do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think when I think about that, it's the what is a photo question. There's photos of objects and photos of, like, people and scenes.
Yeah.
And I think if, like, you have a billion images of, say, the Empire State Building from 42nd Street, and someone takes a photo from that spot just like everybody else did, your phone recognizes it and sharpens up the windows and does the thing that it knows it's supposed to look like, I wouldn't be mad, because that's actually reality, uh-huh. is what you're getting closer to. But where I would get kind of weirded out is if it's like a group of my friends around the campfire, and then the phone's like, oh, I know what your friend's face around the campfire is supposed to look like, and changes it.
Yeah.
Like, I want to remember the moment, not the object. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
I was going to say, like, at one point, your phone basically becomes a search engine. Like that example with 42nd Street.
Yeah, we talked about
it. If you took a photo of 42nd Street, but it's like, oh, it's a cloudy day, but this actually looks the best when the sun is hitting it because it's 7 p.m. And so we're just going to overlay what it looked like at 7 p.m. in someone else's photo. Your phone becomes a search engine at that point. It's searching Google Images and then just basically just kind of overlaying.
Luminar AI, giving you a sky replace.
Yeah, like when you take a photo, it's less about taking the photo and it's more about searching a database and showing people that you are at this location that exists.
I think it should always aim to improve the photo towards reality, not towards, like, better looking, if that makes sense. Like, if I take a photo and it's cloudy, I don't want it to add golden hour. Like, I want it to be more accurate because it knows what cloudy is supposed to look like, and I'm actually in a cloudy scene. So I don't want it to enhance it and make it look better or different. Because we talked about this with the iPhone thing, where it's like, it lights your face evenly, even though there's no light on your face.
Remember how,
like,
terrible that picture of me was?
Yeah, at night. And we're like, that doesn't look right, because that's not what real life looks like. I would always want it to enhance towards natural, towards reality. And I think it gets kind of weird. Like, the moon one is technically enhancing it to be more accurate. Right, I guess it's like it's making your photo better. Everyone's photo of the moon more or less should look the same because we all see the same moon. I just don't want them to get to, like, enhancing it and making it look different.
Yeah. Counterpoint, the majority of people buying these phones do want that.
I was just going to say, from a marketing perspective, they absolutely want your photo to look better.
I want my face to look better in photos.
If it's a cloudy day and it could be golden hour in front of the Empire State Building, they're going to make it golden hour in front of the Empire State Building.
This is really interesting. You've seen this TikTok face filter thing that's going around? Have you guys seen this?
I don't have TikTok because I'm a boomer.
Oh, wait, which
one? Okay, so there's a new glamour filter in TikTok that is actually used. It's not an overlay anymore. It's a little different. It's actually generative AI.
Oh, no.
And so it looks at your face. And so, you know how on Snapchat, if you, like, cover half your face, it, like, glitches out and disappears? Mm-hmm. On this one, you can obscure parts of your face and it still perfectly applies the rest of the filter. It's called the glamour filter. And people are universally weirded out by this. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone's using it and trying it and getting weirded out. And that's the theme, is because it looks like a super enhanced version of you. So I don't think people actually want things to look, like, super enhanced. It's a little weird. They just want it to look accurate.
In 1 month, no one will be weirded out, and everyone will be using it.
I think people do want to look super enhanced.
In 2 months, everyone will just be wearing AR glasses, and we'll just see it applied to everyone in the world.
Which,
like, the makeup industry will collapse, and it'll just be AI filters.
Yeah. AR music. Are you trying
to doing
glamour,
it right now?
The glamour filter?
I'm pretty hot.
I mean,
we already knew that.
Do I have the glamour filter on my eyes?
Wait, I want to screen record this.
I just have the glamour filter in real life. So
it really does. Like, it makes my eyebrows look super clean, and, like, I just
cover one of your eyes with your hand, and it just goes. Oh yeah, that's fine.
Ellis looks like a model. That's so interesting. Very weird.
Get ready for our mental health crisis to get even worse.
It's like, of course, it's TikTok that pulls us off. It's TikTok, so it's like. Snapchat does the overlay stuff, and they'll probably start doing AI generative filters too. Do people want that? I don't know.
Yes, they do.
I feel like
yes, they do. And then it will be horrible for society in about a year.
Do they want a subtly enhanced version, or do they just want the golden hour?
They want the crazy.
110%.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's not the reaction it's
online
getting
dating
right now.
Is gonna suck soon.
I think the reason it's getting that reaction is because people are like being people will be reactive about this kind of technology, but at the end of the day, people are going to use it every single day.
Even if you just take one step back, like to the photos we're taking, though, like every single photo we take of our face is getting like the remember the Pixel 6, how over sharpened it was? Like that's not much different than this moonshot. Like clarity 100, just like that's what the moonshot really feels like it's doing, and that's what it's doing to our faces, or it's smoothing it so then all of the wrinkles are going away. Like
I prefer,
it's very similar.
Yeah, I guess those are in opposite directions though. The sharpening is theoretically more realistic, and the smoothening is less realistic. The smoothie is less realistic.
I mean, sharpening is not necessarily more realistic.
You can get to the point of less
it just depends
realistic.
On like what level of sharpness and contrast our eyes see.
Right.
It's all based on like
I think our eyes see much more than a camera typically sees. So whenever you can enhance what a camera sees to get more of the detail that your eyes see, like when you look up at the moon in real life, you see the craters and you see the moon. So when you point the camera at the moon because you want to capture softer. The moon, you wish it wasn't a blob. You wish you were getting what your eyes were seeing.
Yeah.
So I think I personally want to get more of what my eyes are seeing.
For sure.
Ideally.
Yeah.
As a tool, I think it's kind of cool because zoom in general on phones is pretty terrible. So like these super zoom into the moon doing that is cool. I hope it can get to the point where if I'm actually zooming in and trying to be like, I saw a grizzly bear at this park and like, I don't want to get anywhere close to it, but now it's just this like brown blur on my phone. Like if they can enhance that, it'll be pretty cool. Don't overlay a bear on it. But
it's going to overlay a bear eating salmon because that's what bears do.
In the middle of the woods with no water nearby.
So now we're just making generative art instead of taking pictures.
It's just Dolly.
Sick. Yeah. Soon we'll just get the Dolly phone, the OpenAI phone.
Yeah.
Where it texts all your friends for you because it knows what you would text like.
Oh,
it takes pictures for you because it knows what your pictures would look like.
I have a lot to say about that later in the episode. So stay tuned.
You guys might have been wondering earlier when I talked about this crazy wacky product that you've already seen if you're watching the podcast.
Oh, I forgot that we brought that up.
Yeah. It's this. It's right here. It's on my wrist. This, if you're an audio listener, would be a pretty good time to switch to video because this is going to be hard to explain or demonstrate.
Sorry, Derek.
Sorry. I don't know. Thanks, Derek.
Who's Derek?
My bad, Derek.
He's my favorite.
He's a friend of mine who admitted that he only listens to the audio version of the podcast.
Derek.
I mean, no. A lot of people do that.
No, yeah, they do.
I see you guys. You're fine.
It's a podcast. I get it.
Have we explained what it is yet? Derek.
No, but okay. I want to. Okay, I'll try for audio people. I'll try. I'm wearing a Huawei smartwatch, and it looks like a pretty normal watch. It's a thicker one, and if you were wearing it like me, you'd feel it's a little heavier than normal. But it's a smartwatch. It's got a nice big circular display. It's got metal all the way around. It's got one button on the side, and it's got a metal watch strap. And oh my God, it opens up.
You already forgot how to open.
and if you can see that, there's going to be a dope tech video probably soon by the time this goes up that also shows these. But you open it up and there's earbuds inside, and you just pop them out. I was going to put it in my ear as if I could
put them on my headphones.
So but these little tiny bullet capsule, it's like the size of size of an actual pill. Mac is underneath pill. This right now.
He would think that's food.
So these sort of magnetize into the top and they snap back down into the watch. I had very low expectations for this, and it's because my theory about two-in-one devices, and I'm sure many people have experienced this, is when you try to combine two different categories of products into one product, something's got to be worse. Usually both.
Yeah.
Like when you get a two-in-one laptop and it's trying to be a tablet and a laptop, it's usually not a great tablet or a great laptop, just being honest, but it's two-in-one, so that's cool. This is kind of along the same lines. The smartwatch loses some battery. It still gets like pretty good battery life.
What is pretty good? What have you seen so far?
Huawei Watch GT claims like 10 to 14 days of battery life.
I don't believe that at all.
Maybe we don't believe it, but this claims 3 days of battery life.
Wow.
So it's worse than the normal, but it's usable. And I'm on day two right now. I haven't done a whole lot on it, so I'm at 82% because it's not connected to the phone. But it's tracking my heart rate, tracking my calories, tracking my miles, all that stuff. It's just acting like a normal watch. Fine. The earbuds, they suffer because they have to draw battery and charge from the smartwatch. So that's going to take battery from the smartwatch. But they're also tiny.
They sound like really bad.
They sound not great. They have active noise cancellation. You can't really tell. It's not that good.
Dang.
And then the controls, you kind of have to tap this very tiny area, and it's supposed to also be able to respond to like you tapping your temple or the side of your head.
Oh.
Very hit or miss. 3 hour battery life before you have to recharge it.
That's
so to me, it's
fair.
Like, it's fine. It's like the convenience factor of you being in the airport and you get a phone call and you just want to grab it real quick. You just pop an earbud out, put one of them in your ear, and you're on the phone just like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. You're never going to lose your earbud case because guess what? You're wearing it.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. But I'm not about to sit down and like listen and watch a movie on these earbuds. This is not like for the long-term high-quality listening experience. This is just like a convenience play.
Right.
And so for that, it was better than I expected, but I would still never get them.
Also, they have to be used on Huawei phones.
This particular one, yeah.
It has to.
It's a Huawei product that pairs with a Huawei phone. Yeah.
Can we compare thickness here? We've got three pretty...
This is weird for
audio
listeners.
Here's a regular watch, so that's...
Sorry, audio listeners.
We'll say it out loud. We have a Apple Watch Ultra, a Garmin Epix Gen 2, and then what is it? Huawei
Watch Buds.
Watch Buds.
So it's funny because the watch is called Watch Buds. Yeah, it's the Watch Buds.
Yeah.
It's about the same thickness as your Garmin. It's actually a little bit
I would say with
chunkier
the bottom
than
of it. No, it's
thicker.
It's thicker.
It's thicker.
Yeah.
But it's got the shape of a normal Huawei smartwatch. It doesn't look crazy on my wrist. It looks like a normal
It looks like
a big premium smartwatch on my wrist. It doesn't look out of place. I'm actually kind of impressed that it doesn't look ridiculous and it opens up and there's earbuds inside and you would never think that looking at them. I actually kind of want to do one of those videos. I always want to do these videos where you go into New York City and you hand someone a tech product and you're like, tell me about it. What do you think? And I would do that with these, and I don't think anyone would think there's earbuds inside. Nobody would think there's earbuds inside.
Well, yeah.
I mean, like, I've wanted to do that video with ProMotion and give people, like, an iPhone, one with ProMotion on and one with ProMotion off, and be like, swipe around. How do you feel about the screen? And just see if anybody notices, because I always have this theory that people notice as soon as they figure out what's happening. I don't think anyone would notice.
People have run those tests on high refresh rate versus low refresh rate, and only a few people notice.
Interesting.
Yeah.
John
it's like
did the
30% of people notice.
John did the like PPI on the XR and the 10R and the 10.
Yeah.
And like I mean, it was very even.
That one.
Like a lot of people didn't really.
Yeah. I like to experiment with the framing of it. Like if you just hand them the two phones and say, notice anything, you probably won't get anything. But if you say, swipe back and forth a little bit, does one of them feel different swiping back and forth? Then you start to get people going, oh yeah, wait a second. This one feels smoother. And then they can't unsee it anymore. And it kind of, that effect happens.
Yeah.
That's a fun project I've wanted to do and just haven't done yet. But this one, nobody would suspect a thing. It's just normal.
Yeah.
You're James Bond.
Yeah.
It's fun.
It is a very like 007 kind of fun gadget.
Oh my God. It's just born.
Anyway. Is James Bond the good guy or a bad guy?
I think he's a hero. I might be wrong. We're going to take a quick break. But before we do, we should do trivia.
Trivia.
There
okay.
It is.
So we spoke about the Huawei Watch Buds.
Sure did.
But we want to throw it back to the OGs in the game.
Yeah.
So before Google acquired Fitbit, Fitbit acquired a company called Pebble.
Sure did.
They had a very impressive Kickstarter launch. They raised about $10 million in like a couple months. What year did that happen in?
Ooh.
The Kickstarter? Or
the Kickstarter. The actual Kickstarter funding.
Wow. Okay, I remember.
I think
some details around my life, and I'm just gonna have to work backwards.
That's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm gonna guess.
Okay. Perfect.
Nice. Solid.
We'll do the answers at the end of the pod like usual. Till then, we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Ben. I suffer from a condition called writer's block. It strikes when I'm at work. That's why I choose Canva Magic Write. It works fast, generating texts in seconds, thanks to AI.
Common side effects include increased productivity, compliments from coworkers, feelings of satisfaction.
Now I can say bye-bye to writer's block.
Ask your boss if Canva Magic Write is right for you at canva.com, designed for work.
Canva. Support for this show comes from NetSuite. Let's do some quick math. So the less your business spends on operations or multiple systems, the more margin you'll have, and that equals more money in your pocket. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, I mean, everything seems to cost more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. So NetSuite is a leading cloud financial system bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. And so you can reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. So you can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you can improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math, see how you'll profit with NetSuite. Now through April 15th, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program. So head to netsuite.com/waveform. That's netsuite.com/waveform. netsuite.com/waveform. All right, we're back. Let's talk about, this is a kind of a rare story in tech. This almost never happens, but we actually have a little bit of leaked information from a new Pixel phone before it's even announced.
Who would have thought?
This is this is wild. We don't get to, this is like, I try not to pay attention to leaks. I want it to be a surprise. And Google stuff is almost always a complete surprise when it comes out. They go on stage, they go, this is a Pixel. I go, dang, you did nice. So that's all sarcasm.
This might be a bigger, this might be a bigger story than the yellow iPhone.
It might be. Maybe, this is huge. Yeah. So this time we just got a little taste of the Pixel 7a, just a little breadcrumb. And the breadcrumb is someone has the entire phone already and took high resolution detailed photos of every angle of it and put them online.
And booted it up.
And booted it up and has lots of interesting things to say about it.
Fun.
Okay, so we knew there was going to be a 7a because we've had the 5a and the 6a, and this looks kind of like the 6a again. But it's a 7a. The details are kind of just that it's going to have a lot of the same specs that we expected. It's two 12 megapixel cameras, a single SIM, no headphone jack, flat screen, the metal bar camera on the back. If you look at these photos, they kind of have like this really subtle pattern. I don't know. How do we feel about this pattern? I kind of think it looks like when you take a case off that has adhesive and it just like left a residue on the phone in a pattern, but maybe that's part of the phone.
I think it kind of looks like the S you used to draw in high school or in like middle school in that one corner.
Tessellated.
I kind of like it. I think it like adds a little to it. I think like since the regular models usually have the two-tone, like the A series is always one solid color through, so it adds a little something different that differentiates from the top model, but
yeah,
I don't know, it's kind of nice. Oh, got his case slapped on it immediately.
Yeah, that's a fact. But okay, two main improvements why you would be interested in this new 7a. One is they're saying that there's an option for a 90 hertz screen, which I assume is like a software setting that they found.
Yeah, like it uses additional battery but would get smoother,
higher refresh rate. So that's I'm interested.
I think it's big also because the 6a was the one that had the like 90 hertz panel but no options, and people were hacking ways to find it. So this is looks like we're actually getting just the default option for 90 hertz,
which I think is why that they maybe there's a little bit of a bigger battery or something, I don't know, but they've maybe this one has 90 hertz, which is cool. Higher refresh rate on this level of a phone is becoming more and more common. The other thing is it's had a glass back, but now finally has allegedly 5-watt wireless charging. 5-watt wireless charging is, it's not fast, but it is wireless charging. It's like better than nothing.
Yeah.
And so again, in a world where it's like in budget phones, you either just cut corners and nix features or like maybe barely include a feature. Like you'll see a phone with like four cameras on the back. You're like, wow, multi cameras. And they're like, one of them's a macro, one of them's a black and white camera, and one of them's a depth sensor. And you're like, you didn't have to spend that money. I don't want any of those. This one is like, some people really like wireless charging. In a world of people buying the Pixel 7a, I feel like a lot of them are coming from a phone that didn't have wireless charging, and it'll be nice and convenient to have it.
Yeah.
Just have it.
Yeah.
Trickle charge overnight.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah. I'm totally fine with slow wireless charging, if I'm being honest.
Really?
Like, yeah, because most of my wireless charging is done over a long period of time, and I can do it so often because I can just pick it up so easy. Like, I don't know. I don't really care.
Mine is not done over a long period of time. So like fast wireless charging is really nice for me. Because I don't really plug my phone in physically anymore at all ever. And I don't always remember to put on the charger at nighttime.
Well, that sounds like a you problem.
Well, okay, I usually do, but sometimes I'm like, you know, using my phone and I just pass out on the couch or something.
Okay.
And I just forget to plug it in.
So fast charging is...
Yeah, fast wireless charging would be nice. But like you said, So here's a real world example. My sister wants a new phone, but she only wants small phones. She bought a Pixel 6 and returned it because she hated how big it was, even the regular 6, because she has girl pants and girl pants don't have pockets. I asked her if a Pixel 6a would work for her because it's a smaller device.
A little smaller.
And she doesn't really care about literally anything except for the fact that it's a Pixel. But she said, oh, I'm used to having wireless charging and I need wireless charging.
Ooh, that's a specific. Okay, so needs to be small and needs to have wireless charging.
Yeah.
I was about to go straight to Zen phone.
I also told her Zen phone.
Yeah.
But she's really hooked on Pixels.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because Zen phone is the closest thing you can get to a Pixel, but it does not have wireless charging.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, I'm assuming pricing is going to be about the same as last Pixel 6a, Pixel 5a.
Yeah.
It was a $350. I think it was more.
I think it was $399.
I thought 6a went up a little bit from the 5a, right?
I mean, this is, if they add 90 hertz and add 5-watt wireless charging, I wouldn't be shocked if it was at the top of what they were doing last time.
Yeah,
$449. Yeah.
Oh, $449.
Yeah.
I would hope it's
now $300. It's on sale.
Okay. For $449. You start to get phones that have like, because this is gonna have a Tensor chip. You start to get phones that have like 90 hertz, sometimes 120 hertz, sometimes already wireless charging. Yeah, this is mid range territory.
But even with those, even with these two new options, I still think it should be $449. If they're just gonna keep bumping the price up $30 or $50 every, then it's just going it's just going to be the 6 soon, or you know, the 7 or the low end 8.
I think whatever. The Pixel 4a was the best A phone ever, and I think it started at like $349.
They were like $350 at some point.
Yeah,
right?
They started at $350. Yeah, yeah. I think it was $349 and it was like such a good phone.
That was one of my favorite phones ever.
The 4a,
it was so good.
It was so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we'll keep an eye on that. Now, believe it or not, there is actually more. There's more Pixel leaks. I know, this is crazy.
No,
this never happens. Pixel Fold, we've sort of been like anticipating for a while, thinking Google's going to do a folding phone every year. It's like, is this the year? And then the next year, we're like, okay, this might be the year.
Yeah.
It seems like 2023 is the year. We're going to get a folding Pixel phone. And there are some renders of it by people who have sources that seem to think it's going to look kind of like an Oppo Find N. So it'll be, if you remember the N, it's a slightly shorter and more passport-shaped folding phone. So the screen on the front is, I think, more usable for one-handed use like a normal phone. And then you open it, and it's not a gigantic inside screen, but it is more screen. And then you can do two-handed, multitasking, multi-window, fun Pixel stuff. I'm bracing myself for this to be another classic example of Pixel is all about software. And don't get it if you're expecting the most premium hardware. If you want the most premium hardware, you'll probably have to get the Oppo Find N or the Samsung or something else.
But you basically can't get it in America. So
right. Or one of the, or at least a Samsung phone that you know is tested from years of having folding phones.
Yeah.
And the Google advantage is going to be, well, it's a Pixel. So you're going to want all the magic of the software and the cameras and everything else. That's what I'm bracing myself for. I don't expect this to like blow me out of, oh my God, there's no bezel. Oh my God, there's no crease. I don't expect any of that.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Which would make me sad.
Jinx.
Do we just say
everybody's sad? Close. We're both sad and that's all that matters. Yeah.
Counterpoint though, the Pixel Watch was actually really nice hardware.
Really nice hardware.
I think the software is almost where it
Bezel was rough. I do think the overall design made the bezel less annoying just because it like looked good in the like rounded edges. Yeah. But
it was good design. I would say that distinguished between good design and good hardware, because when I picture great design, a great hardware, I also think like big battery, like great optimization of space, like all these nice materials. And then with design, it's like, oh yeah, you've got the bezels nice at the edge. It's nice and trim. It's handsome looking device. I think the Pixel thing, at least with the phones is just like, look, it's a fine piece of hardware, but you're here for the software.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the Pixel thing is.
Yeah. Yeah. But the rumors around this is that it may be announced or may come out on June 13th.
I think announced June 13th.
Well, they're saying they might show it off at I.O.
That's my guess.
Oh, yeah. Released in July, potentially.
Well, I wrote that. The date I saw was June 13th, which I'm guessing is an announcement because that would be around I.O., right?
I.O.'s in May.
Is it in May?
Yeah.
So then maybe it could be. We have seen announced I.O. released
a month later.
Early July. Yeah.
A lot of the old A series devices were always announced to IO and released in early June.
I remember one specifically that was in July.
That's because it got waiting? Pushed.
It was late. Okay, yeah.
So the 4A got pushed to August.
Okay, so then maybe
the 5A came out in July.
Cool. Then maybe it is released June 13th.
That'd be dope.
That'd be awesome.
That'd be dope. Yeah, if we got an A series and a Fold in June. I was going to say, like, the Pixel Fold feels like one of those things that has been rumored for literal years and years and years.
Like
the watch. Just like the Apple mixed reality headset. They both seem like these products that are like literally never going to come out, but people talk about them all the time. Also like the Apple car, even though that's gonna be a long time coming.
Forever.
But it would be really amazing if both the Pixel Fold and the Apple mixed reality headset actually came out in 2023.
That would be kind of sick.
Yeah.
I think that would be longer odds, could happen.
Yeah.
The rumors point to like Tim Cook going, it needs to be out this year. So that'd be cool.
Counterpoint, we'd have a lot less to talk about on the podcast if both of them actually released. How are we going to talk about rumors and speculations?
Oh, we just
if
they talk actually about the next release? Gen. Yeah. The next generation.
Yeah, I mean, we already are talking about the second generation Apple mixed reality headset. So.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Speaking of next gen, there are yet more Pixel rumors.
Oh my God.
Because of course we need to have a Pixel 8 and 8 Pro this year. Mm-hmm. Of course.
This week we got every single Pixel that is going to come out this year. We got renders and rumors about.
Isn't that funny? Pixel things leaking, that usually... That's weird.
This reminds me of
weird.
We watched the Eddie Burback video, right? Where he's like, what if there were 10 restaurants? I lied. There's this many. It's like, we have a leak. I lied. There's more.
Yeah. So Pixel 8 and 8 Pro we're expecting. It's actually not too much, but I think the one thing that caught my eye from Twitter is 8 Pro flat screen. That's really all I'm here for.
That's all that matters.
Yeah.
That's great. You pre-ordered it already.
I basically have. Like, verbally, this is my commitment, Google. Get me one.
Phone of the year already.
I'll give you the dollars that you are going to charge for it. I think the sort of first two generations of the Pixel having that curved outer, on the Pro anyway.
Yeah.
I would always use the Pro. Because it has a higher refresh rate, because it has a telephoto camera, but I would always wish it had the flat screen of the non-Pro, because I actually low-key like that a little more now.
Same.
And I think this is the first year we're expecting flat on both.
What if there's a chance we got flat screen on the Pro and 120 hertz on the regular?
That would be really hard to sell the Pro. Because remember, every time the Pro comes out...
I don't want to get into this again. We can save getting destroyed later.
I'll summarize it. I'll compress it for you. The only difference between the Pixel and the Pixel Pro is higher refresh rate, bigger battery, bigger screen, telephoto camera. That's basically it.
I think David's saying the 8 Pro is a bad buy.
What?
You're just putting words in his mouth.
I have not said a single word.
Everyone tweeted David.
Leave me alone. God.
Team Pixel's out for you right now. They're coming to get you.
I never said a single thing.
No, I'm excited about that. I think we'll look forward to all these Pixel phones this year. I don't think we're going to get any more leaks. Usually Pixel stuff is really sealed, like tight. So I think this is about all we can expect to get.
So lapse.
Probably not going to see any more of this, so enjoy it while you can.
Run this joke into the ground.
What's this?
I would not have been shocked at all. Okay, that's a great place for a break, which means we should do one more trivia question.
All right, in 2007, a company called Polymer Vision released an e-reader with a rollable screen. A rollable screen in 2007. I know. Was this device called A, the Readius, B, the Roller Scroller, or C, the Scrollio?
I know how excited you were to make that question.
All right, I think we're all going to attempt to picture this device in our heads. We'll see how successful we are. We'll be back after the break.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Support for Waveform comes from 1Password. So it's hard to come up with a totally unique password every time you need one, but it's what you gotta do to stay secure. Luckily, a password manager makes creating and tracking your passwords completely painless. So, 1Password, combines industry-leading security with award-winning design to bring its users private, secure, and user-friendly password management. And it does that by generating as many strong, unique passwords as you need, and then securely storing them in an encrypted vault that only you have access to. With 1Password, you just need to remember one strong account password, and it'll protect everything else from your logins, your credit cards, notes, office Wi-Fi, etc. You no longer need to keep a bunch of sticky notes all over your desk or reuse the same password over and over again. I've tried out 1Password. As you know, I switch between devices and phones constantly, and so using 1Password to just fill out things quickly and log into a whole bunch of stuff makes switching between devices a lot easier, so I'm all good to go once I sign in. So right now, our listeners can get a free 2-week trial at 1Password.com/waveform. That's the number 1Password.com/waveform for 2 free weeks. So 1Password.com/waveform.
Okay, welcome back, guys. So we have some new information about Google's basically ChatGPT/generative AI workspace stuff. They are now officially integrating generative AI into basically all of Google Workspace.
It's about time.
Yeah. So this is their competitor to all of Microsoft integrating stuff into Office. And there's a lot here, actually. There's like a lot here. They're integrating it into Gmail, into Docs, into Google Slides, pretty much everything that Microsoft had. But there's a lot of really interesting features. For example, you can say, like, help me write an email about this, and it'll just write the whole email.
That's what I was hoping for. That's exactly what I was hoping for. Because I was going to wait for an email client to do this first and, like, add a text generation thing where it could just be like, write me an excuse to not go to work on Thursday. And then it would just type this amazing email and you just hit send. And then
we're
going,
like, to start testing.
They'd start charging. They'd start charging a fee because they can write your emails for you.
Yeah.
So now Google's going to do it and it's going to be free. Love that.
Yeah. The official list that they say is they have draft, reply, summarize, and prioritize your Gmail. Brainstorm, proofread, write and rewrite in Docs. Bring your creative vision to life with auto-generated images, audio, and video in Slides.
Oh.
Go from raw data to insights and analysis via auto-completion, formula generation, and contextual categorization in Sheets. Generate new backgrounds and capture notes in Meet. And enable workflows for getting things done in Chat.
Oh, the Google Meet notes thing. I think they already said something about that, where you're on a meeting and it's taking notes about the meeting for you.
Which is great. I love that.
That's sweet.
Yeah, some of these are really, really helpful. Some of these I'm a little bit concerned about.
Which ones are you concerned about?
I'm a little bit concerned about the ones where it's writing emails for you. I'm a little bit concerned about the ones where, like, one of their examples is writing a job listing. I'm just a little bit concerned that, like, the less effort people are going to have to put into these systems to generate a lot of more information, the less likely they're going to be to actually proofread what it's saying. So if you say, write me an email about this, and it ends up being either not exactly what you meant to say, or it added stuff to the email that you didn't ask for and that you didn't know about, and the other person gets that and they read it and they go, regarding this point, what do you mean? And you're like, what are they talking about? I never said that. It's like you're passing off information from your brain to an AI, and in order to not have to do that work yourself. And this has been a thing that I've thought about a lot in the last few years. It's like, we're now starting to offload storage from our brains onto hard drives, you know, to the point where we have to do less work. We have to put less cognitive effort in, and therefore it's being stored on a computer instead. And so now if it starts writing all these emails and writing these documents that say things that you didn't pay a lot of attention to, it's like when we were talking about before, when you're doing a test or you're writing an essay or you're doing a research project and you actually learn about the thing by proofreading yourself and going through something and making sure that you understand it, there's going to be less and less of that happening and people are going to less understand what they're saying.
In the future, instead of like, oh, that was autocorrect, it'll be like, oh, transformer error. Like, you'd be like, wait, I thought this job said that it was two days a week that are remote. Oh, no, the diffusion model.
Right, imagine that. It's like you read a job posting and it's like fully remote, and because it's trained on like most jobs being fully remote, but the actual hiring manager didn't want it to be fully remote.
So that'll be the thing, is like, maybe the skill becomes training your AI instead of like writing.
It's also just like giant user error if you're doing it like that, though. And I feel like in those situations where if you're messing that up, then the job listing you're posting to is going to be like, what do you mean by this? Oh, I didn't write that. End of conversation. Yeah, like, I'm not going to do this.
The whole point, if you want to write a long formal email, like the whole point of it writing the email for you is you have to do less work.
But you still have to proofread it. It's still less work.
I don't think most people can proofread stuff. Well, then
that's
stuff.
I think that's their problem then. And like ultimately it will weed people like that out. They'll still try and use it and maybe it'll work. But I think like ultimately people who are just, that's just the same people who are like copy and pasting work online for school projects and stuff like that. They're just going to fail those instances where they try and do it.
I kind of disagree a little bit. I think that actually it's up to the engineers and the designers of these platforms to make it easier for people to proofread the work, you know, in the interfaces. And I also think that a lot of times people who make tools like this actually make it harder to self-check and to self-proofread, because that is how you admit the flaws in the thing you've designed.
Yeah, I guess in this current state where the AI tools aren't perfect, it is a skill to be able to take the output from the AI and turn it into something fully correct or fully useful. Like that's a specific skill right now. And then the question is, when the AI tools get better and better and better, is your skill going to have to shift out of that correction and into some other phase where you're the one training the AI, or you're the one like deploying the AI into like what it should be typing where? I just think right now it is the skill. You have to be able to take what AI gives you and turn it into something useful. You don't just copy and paste it.
My question is, like, does it become, because at the end of the day, you're going to have people that are trained to proofread whatever the AI generates and make sure that it's tailored to what they actually want. And my question is going to be, is it going to take them longer to have to proofread what the AI writes than it's going to take them to just write it correctly in the first place?
It depends on their knowledge base. Like, if someone's just a copywriter and good at researching and fact checking, then it's like, you can give me any AI output and I can turn it into a useful thing.
Yeah.
But if it's like, I need you to write, you know, job listings and job listings only, then maybe if you just get an expert on writing job listings, you don't need this AI thing that slows them down. They just do the thing that they're good at.
Yeah.
So yeah, the AI tool, this is just a fun time to be interested in this AI stuff, because it's not perfect. And so the skill becomes turning it into something useful. What do you do with it where? I just think it's fun.
Yeah, I do think, like, in terms of you saying, could it take longer? It'll be dependent on the person. Like, if you are a great writer, like, you've written for so long of your life, it'll probably take longer for you because it will write it all out for you.
And
you're like, this isn't how I want to say this. This is wrong. This is wrong. This is wrong. But for someone who doesn't write, maybe like me, I could be like, this is a really couple quick thoughts I have. Can you write this all out? And it's like, wow, that described it way better than I ever could have. Yeah. And therefore, as long as I just make sure a couple of these things sound correctly to me, that will be way faster for me. Like, I've written a couple like very short Substack articles and I've had to proofread them 10 times because I'm just like, I don't like how I said that. Change the whole paragraph and it changes the whole meaning of everything. And then I had to rewrite the entire thing. And
it's really fun because also using AI as a tool, as a creator is interesting now. Like I have a certain writing style when I'm writing a video. I don't necessarily script every single word, but what I am doing is getting a list of points that I need to cover and say in a certain order and get the facts right. And then the sort of connective tissue is just like in the flow of things. And so when I am like creating something from scratch and I start with a blank page, that first bit of like generating the skeleton of the thing I want to say actually can be done by AI. Like that actually is a thing where I could plug it into ChatGPT and be like, give me a top five list of the most innovative, let's go, most successful tech products of all time. And then it just goes, all right. It does the research. It finds a list of five. Maybe I asked for 10 and I narrow it down. And and then I take that and I go, okay, let me think. Which one of these 10 do I want to use? And then I can narrow it down and pick the five best ones and then write all of the connective tissue that would have taken much less time.
Yeah.
So I actually successfully in that instance used the AI to help me write something. Mm-hmm. And then even though it never gets like published as written thing, it's just me talking.
And then in the video, David's the fact checker anyway, so he's got to do all the hard work.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, at least this is also what I said in the video, if it's about a topic that I already know about, then when I get the AI output, I can diagnose what I need to fix. Mm-hmm. If it's about a topic I don't know about, that's tough. Then I am spending a lot more time fact checking and source reading.
I will just say, like, the concerns that I have around a lot of these features are only for, like, a few things. Some of the other features are actually super useful, like, and really nice. Like, for example, the fact that it can take, like, bulleted notes and summarize meetings for you. That's really awesome.
But can it unsubscribe from emails? That's
the first thing that I thought of when you mentioned
Gmail can already do that.
No, it can. I click it. For, like, some of them, it'll have the unsubscribe thing on the top, and you click it, and then 2 days later, I'll still get an email from that.
This happens to me.
It depends. It depends on the website. But
AI should fix that.
That's the number one. As soon as an AI
that's
can do
all
that,
I want.
That's
all
it.
I want.
Yeah.
I really like the meeting notes, the raw data insights and analysis via auto-completion and Sheets is really helpful, because you're basically just taking something that it's like, I don't necessarily have this, I don't know how to use Google Sheets correctly, and I have all this information. It's just a button to, like, do that analysis for you.
That's good.
Very useful.
Oh, yeah.
Being able to, like, brainstorm things in Google Docs, very useful. So I think just like every other AI category, there's probably going to be a large amount of people arguing about what's okay and what's not okay. Mm-hmm. You could have people say, like, oh, well, people are trained in Excel and you should be hiring an Excel person. Or another feature that's obviously going to be super controversial is that in Google Slides, you can just auto-generate images and audio. And that's been the kind of highlight of most of the controversy recently, because the images it generates are going to be based on a database somewhere.
Right.
Depending on where they get that database, if it's an ethical database versus a regular scraping database, who knows? But I would say that overall, this is an example of boring computing, which is where you get to integrate AI into something that just, like, makes your life a little bit easier. Because Google has had really, 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 really basic versions of all of this stuff for a really long time. When you're writing in Google Docs and you say, I want to, and then it'll suggest that Gmail. It finishes the rest of the sentence, you hit tab and it fills it in, right?
Yeah.
It's just doing that, but with way more tokens. And then a lot of other random features like this.
That's why it kind of feels like a natural evolution to me. Like the Gmail app right now, if I say my address is and hit space, it goes, oh, I know what you're about to write. And it says, if you just want to take that address like you usually do, just swipe over, hit tab, it appears. Mm-hmm. And like, so the skill is just knowing like how to trigger that and how to type and have that save you a little bit of time. And I guess now it's like, okay, autocomplete was just me going, press the first, you know how you'll write your first word and then just hit the middle autocomplete word and it just makes a sentence based on what it thinks.
Yeah,
that's just because it's trained off of you typing a lot.
Yeah.
It's just a little bit more advanced than that.
Maybe I'm just a boomer and I'm a little concerned about this, but like I just, thanks. I don't know. I worry about a day where everything is completely written by AI and it removes every single ounce of individualism from our writing to the point where like, any email, you know, I know that you don't care when you get an email that's like very, very businessy.
80% of my emails are templates anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like all the PR emails we get PR emails that say, hello, journalist, or like, hello, YouTuber. Mm-hmm. And obviously they didn't even go in and do the work of filling that in their templates. But like, I'm concerned about a day where you're like, tell Michael why I can't make it to his birthday party. And then it writes this long thing like, I'm so sorry, I've got a thing that's going on. And it's like, you know, it's, I don't know. It's
this
a little,
is maybe,
it concerns me a little bit, but this is a controversial topic and I'm a boomer. So
I don't think you need to worry, because soon AI will be able to tell your tone and your characteristics and then it'll be able to write that in a very
that's literally
way.
A Black Mirror episode where like the woman's husband dies and they download all his text messages and then they put him in a data-based robot.
Here's maybe my hot take version of what you were talking about, which is like, if you just write something and it just works, you just hit send. The question of like writing an essay for school, if you put in the prompt into ChatGPT and it spits out an essay and it's like a C- essay and you just hit send, you deserve a C-, because the prompt that you decided to give it and your knowledge of how to use the tools gave that, and you're deciding to not proofread it, you deserve a C-, not an F, because the goal of assigning you an essay is to see how good of a response can you give to the prompt. And that's the response you give, given your tools. And that's it. That's what's gonna happen in real life. When you get a job in the real world, they're gonna be like, write an essay on this, theoretically, and you're gonna give them the C- thing, and you deserve a C-, not an F. But if you get really good at designing prompts for AI, hear me out, you get really good at getting certain words into ChatGPT and it kicks out just the right essay, and then you proofread it a little bit and send that in, and it's an A plus essay. You deserve an A plus because you did that work to create that thing. Given the tools that you have,
I completely agree.
I think it's a skill.
I think that's dependent on the thing you're trying to learn in school. If you're trying to be a doctor and have to write an essay about how to save somebody's life, so you shouldn't have to take the time when someone's dying in front of you to look at ChatGPT.
Okay, so if it's that's a great point.
If you have to learn things to memory to future help on the job site thinking, then that you should fail.
Like if it's write a history essay about why this monument was important for this piece of history and time, maybe you don't need to memorize all those facts, but if you go back and fact check and make sure your essay's good, you are going through the learning process a little bit. But if it's like, write an essay about why this type of surgery is better, and then you're doing that to become a doctor and do that surgery, that ChatGPT thing is not a skill you need to be a good doctor. You should actually use the skills to be a doctor, to get the doctor degree.
Right.
It's a like, very specific.
Yeah. Something I thought about is like when these generative AI can start doing computer science and coding for people, which they can. And there's all these tools that have been popping up in the last couple of years, like No Code, where it can just like create websites for you, create code for you. The problem there is that if everyone grows up not having to learn the fundamentals of things and they just are able to use these tools to make stuff, there becomes a limit of how much you can actually build out from there. Or if you have a problem, how do you diagnose it?
It's like, you mean like photography?
What?
I feel like people don't really know how photography works, but button. They just hit a button on their phone and they have pictures.
Well, yeah, but photography, it's like a photo. You can do a cool photo, but like you're not
like transforming.
You're not creating the future of photography by taking pictures. Like in computer science, if you're like building new tools or building new architectures or whatever, you still have to understand how the architecture works.
No, but because I mean, there will always be people that will do that. Like you are a photographer.
Yeah.
But everyone can take a picture. There's going to be a time where everyone can write code, but there will be engineers that know how to write code.
Yeah. I would hope so. I just don't want us to get to the point where in like elementary school and university, it's like click these buttons and then everything's done for you.
And that's how you get an essay, kids. I think kind of like what you're saying, there has to be the general use of a thing and then the behind the scenes knowledge of how it works thing. And for most people, in most cases, when you drive a car down the highway, you don't have to know how the car works. You just use the tool.
Yeah.
And when you, you know, take a photo with your phone, you don't have to know how it works. You just got a photo. But there will always be some group of people that is, I am actually interested in how this works. I want to get behind the scenes and build the things. Yeah. Then you have to learn those things.
That's true.
You don't get to just use the tool. You actually learn the things.
That's true.
And so this is just one more tool that a lot of people are just going to use for normal things.
Yeah.
And then some fraction of them will be like, I want to get these tools to be better. I'm going to learn how they work. And then that's the other group.
I suppose it's an aspect of democratization, right? Where like many more people can build things that you would normally need to code for. But the people that want to make new stuff still have to be the ones that understand the fundamentals. It's just there's a much wider swath of people that are able to create stuff. Yeah.
Go for it. I was going to say, that's how I felt when you were mentioning how like it can do things in Excel or can do things in Slide, or you might have an Excel expert or designer. I see it more as it will make the average person who's maybe creating the concept of what you need that sheet for or that slide for can create it. And then when it gets into the professional aspect, it's like, this person in Excel can do this 1,000 times faster and do all of it. And then, or this designer, when we need to make slides for presentation, can see my vision and make it into a real thing.
Right.
It almost feels, I just had this thought while you were saying it. It's like ChatGPT is when you call the help desk at any place, it's the first person you talk to that's reading off of a script and telling you all the things on a script. And then the experts are
the
expedited ticket that you made it through all the steps and they can't help you. And now there's an actual expert sitting there that is like, oh yeah, I've dealt with this 100 times before. Like, let me walk you through it.
I think the difference is that we're getting to the point where ChatGPT has dealt with this 100 times before. It can walk you through it. That's the question. It's like,
that's the question. If it does happen, I don't know if we're there yet.
Well, I'm not saying AGI. I'm just saying that especially with
maybe someday,
like we're getting there quickly.
Yeah.
Is what I'm saying.
I think the closer we get, the harder and the farther we'll get, if that makes sense. The closer we get, there's so much harder those Andrew. Last parts. Yeah, the last parts of getting to the actual human level is going to be so hard that that gap is going to exist forever.
Probably. It's like Cars. A little.
Oh, man.
Sorry, I love the analogy, but I'm like, everyone knows how to drive a car in the basic form of turn it on, foot on the gas and steering wheel. Mm-hmm. And if you ask somebody right now to like build a car, it's just like there is a giant gap between people who know how to use a car and know how to make the car better, drive, like build the car. Is that what you mean?
I was going to say, I think it works better with a lot of people can drive a car, but watch autonomous driving, how long that's been going on. And it's so much better than it was, but it is so far away from an actual human driving.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. I think a lot of the Google changes do feel like a more natural evolution of what Google was already doing and not as much of a like stark contrast, like leap away from what they were doing. And I think that that is good and smart. And like we have talked about before, Google has everything to lose and other companies have everything to gain. Thanks. And so them doing that is probably a good move, especially since they like low key announced this, like they weren't making a big deal about it. Whereas whenever OpenAI releases something new, like OpenAI feels like the new Tesla or the new
same guy,
whatever, like like they feel like the new Bell Labs, like everything, whenever they do anything, the world pays attention. And that has only existed for the last like 6 months. Like it's insane how everyone is just like locking on to every little thing they do. Yeah. Whereas Google is being a lot more low key about all these things. I really want to try all these new Google features. I don't know when it's publicly launching, but it seems really interesting.
I can't wait to have it write emails for me. Cannot wait for that. I'm very excited.
I'm nervous. I just think it's going to be funny when you ask it to write long emails and then everyone who receives the emails like, I'm not reading all that. Summarize that for me. And it's just like, well, it's just like within the layers. AI, it's just going like, woo, woo. It's contracting and
I love how you were like, I'm so worried that people aren't going to feel like they're getting my personality in my email. And then those people are going to be like, summarize this.
Yeah, I don't want anyways, his full email.
Yeah.
Amazing. Okay. Well, we've rambled at length about these. Yeah. Well, I think my summarization take is AI is a tool. That's the
for you it's to cheat in college.
Well, it's a useful tool. I didn't cheat in college when I was in college, I'll put it that way.
I wish I had this.
I would have used so much ChatGPT.
Last little thing. OpenAI actually did announce GPT-4.
I'm using it now. That's the entire thing.
Yeah. Which was in Bing for a long time, and neither Microsoft nor OpenAI would say that it was in Bing, but now everyone knows. But if you go on ChatGPT with GPT-4, it can now parse images, which is kind of a game changer in a lot of ways, because you can literally show it a meme and say, tell me why this is funny.
Oh, yeah.
And it will tell you why it's funny.
I saw that. Boomer thing to do.
I thought that was cool, because it was like an iPhone charger that looked like a VGA cable, and it's like, this is funny because a VGA cable is a clunky old piece of tech and it's being plugged into an iPhone.
Yeah. And then someone at the New York Times took a photo of all the food in their fridge and they said, what can I make with all of this? And it was like, well, you could use this thing that you have mixed with this thing to make this meal, which is pretty amazing.
So, yeah, now you're in. Now you're in.
Samsung refrigerators with ChatGPT, so I can look
into
my
smart... You're at the
grocery
store. What should I have for dinner tonight?
What do I need to make this based on what's in my refrigerator and what's in this store?
It's like,
right,
buy
now.
Milk. Yeah.
Smart fridge. Smart fridge. Alice is finally getting a smart fridge.
It also does way better on standardized tests.
I saw that. They literally wrote a chart of like all the standardized test scores.
Yeah. It can process way more text if you put a lot of text into it. And then it's already getting integrated into a ton of mainstream products. So over the last few months, probably since like Bing was released, they've been working with a number of different companies like Duolingo or that Carrot app that you were talking that you use for weather,
the weather app,
to integrate different chat assistants. Obviously Duolingo already had like the owl chat assistant person thing, not person but owl.
Their name is Duo.
It is.
And so now obviously all the chat bots that are already within these apps are just going to get better, which I think is amazing, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's great that you can have a more natural conversation with a chat bot that's already in an app. I don't think every app needs a chat bot, but the ones that already have them are going to get better, which is
final question. What year of CES are we going to see the first refrigerator with a chatbot?
Next year.
Yeah.
Absolutely, 100% next year.
I think that's probably a lock.
I think we're all in on that one.
CES 2024.
Nice. All right. Well, that's about it. We've talked at length for this episode about all these things, but of course, we need to get to the end, which is trivia answers.
Trivia. So, scores. Marquez has 8.
Well, I'm falling behind.
Andrew has 7. David has 11.
Yuppie.
David in the lead. Mm-hmm. Okay. First question, then the music plays, and you have until the end of the music to write down your answer. So, we spoke about the watch buds, the Huawei ones. Before Google acquired Fitbit, Fitbit acquired Pebble after they had an impressive Kickstarter launch. What year did Pebble run their Kickstarter campaign? And the music begins.
The Kickstarter. Oh, okay. The I remember when I had the watch, so I have to like rewind a little bit.
Not a lot of time for rewinding here. I think you better skip.
I'm thinking of the Pebble 2.
I'm going to go
not
with that.
Not the 2. I thought the same thing.
Because I remember the year the Pebble 2 came out.
I had to do a little more Googling to get the original Kickstarter.
Guessing is so much faster.
Okay, I'm ready.
All right. Flip him and read. What do you got?
Oh, wow. Ooh, different answers range. Here. I have 2011.
2014.
2015.
You're both too late.
All wrong. The year was 2012.
Oh, that's what I erased.
I know. I saw.
Oh my god! I was so.
I did have
wrote the correct answer down and then erased it.
Dang. I needed
cool.
that point.
Cool. Everything's fine.
I needed that point. This is a multiple choice one.
This is a multiple choice one. All right. Another trivia question. Big smile. In 2007, a company called Polymer Vision released an e-reader with a rollable screen. In 2007. This device was called A. Hit it. The Readius. B. The Roller Reader. Or C. The Scrollio.
I'm torn. I'm kind of torn.
I'm torn because I know how good Ellis is at making up fake names.
Aw, you guys. All right, what do we got?
Well, I was torn between A and B, but I picked...
Oh, sorry.
I was torn between A and B, but I picked A.
Oh, wow. Let's go.
Thanks.
Well, I didn't. I picked C. Yeah.
The Scrollio, also I'm glad C. you guys liked Scrollio.
Scrollio sounds like an actual Silicon Valley product.
Yeah. Well, I was trying to pick something that would be 2007 Silicon Valley, you know? So, like, Roller Reader may have been a Nook competitor. I don't know.
2007 was, like, kind of before Silicon Valley became Silicon Valley.
That's the
it was first
iPhone.
Yeah.
Facebook existed.
Yeah. But it was, like, before the whole Valley was, like... Startup
culture.
Yeah,
true.
It's early.
Like I used to go there all the time, and it was not like really? It was not the way it is now.
But David, Xerox PARC was there.
I was gonna say there needed to be an X in it if you wanted it to sound like 2007.
Yeah, some crazy spelling.
All right.
Thank you for watching and for listening, and of course, stay tuned till next week. We'll see you there. Peace.
Waveform is produced by Adam Molina and Ellis Rovin. We're partnered with Vox Media Podcast Network, and our intro-outro music is created by Vane Still. That's just going to be one singular word in like 2 years. It's like salt, pepper, ketchup.
Hi. I'm Ben. I suffer from a condition called writer's block. It strikes when I'm at work. That's why I choose Canva Magic Write. It works fast, generating texts in seconds, thanks to AI.
Common side effects include increased productivity, compliments from coworkers, feelings of satisfaction.
Now I can say bye-bye to writer's block.
Ask your boss if Canva Magic Write is right for you at canva.com, designed for work.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.